Welcome back to the Georgia Show. It's Wednesday evening, and we're pleased you could join us. It's been an amazing week already, and we're going to bring you some scenes and some statements from folks down at the Capitol in the last couple of days that showed up to welcome Colton Moore back to a joint session, and we'll see what happened. Before we get kicked off this evening, we want to, as we always do, we want to ask for your support. We continue to invest. We continue to look for the right people to work with a team all across the U.S. and actually over in other parts of the world as well. Please, if you can, help us do that. Help us invest by placing your investment in our no-ad subscription. It removes the ads from all our publications, digital publications all the way across the country, allows you to get both on your phone and on your desktop to directly to the news, and you don't have to go through any ads. And it allows us to pick out the best ways that we can invest to bring you the best news, fastest, and most accurate anywhere that we can find it. So consider that if you would, please, and we appreciate it. We're going to cover three primary topics tonight, maybe a fourth if we have time. We're going to talk about what happened with Colton down at the Capitol at the beginning of this week. We're going to talk about some details about what happened with RFK in his confirmation hearings and a couple other things going on coming out of the Trump administration that we think continue to just show how fast things are moving. We're going to talk about, we are 9 days away right now from the purported release of the remaining records surrounding the JFK assassination. What will come of that? What can we possibly expect to see? We're going to go back and listen to some things that Tucker Carlson and others have said in the past couple of years, just to make sure folks are reminded what was talked about. And then we're going to close with some thoughts regarding Lake and Riley. Trump signed the Lake and Riley Act today. And he had many members of Lakin's family with him while he was doing that. And we want to remember what that sacrifice was all about and fulfill the promise of we will not forget. So before we get going on all of that, let's hear from one of our sponsors, David Cross, and we'll be back right after that.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
So in the past couple of weeks, since the 16th of January, we have been reporting what happened to Colton Moore when he attempted to enter the joint session for the address by Governor Kemp, was prevented and ultimately thrown to the ground and arrested to prevent him from entering that session. We've reported extensively on that. You can go see all the details on georgiarecord.com and on our previous broadcast. But we want to follow up with now what happened this week. So folks will recall the gentleman, this Keith Williams, who calls himself a general counsel on behalf of the Speaker's office for the General Assembly of Georgia. You're going to hear a little bit more about him from the head of one of the conservative organizations here in Georgia in just a few minutes. But over the weekend and into last week, a call went out. And the call was to show up at the Capitol to welcome Senator Colton Moore to the next general session, which was held this Tuesday at the Capitol building again in the House chambers. The hope was that this would not result in the same kind of treatment that Senator Moore got when he tried to enter on the 16th. And as the senator and his staff entered the Capitol, they found about 200 people waiting to welcome him.
Hey,
We were able to compare notes with some of the folks in the crowd. We're going to take you to a dialogue we had with actually some of Senator Moore's constituents that drove all the way from Northwest Georgia to come down and be at the event. We'll bring them in now. All right, we're back again from the almost the rotunda of the Capitol. I'm here with a couple constituents from Colton Moore's area. So, guys, thank you for coming. What brought you down here this morning?
Well, my name's Jim Colt, and the reason that I came down was to support my senator, our senator, Colton Moore. He is doing exactly what we've elected him to do. We're proud of him. We re-elected him for the second time, and we expect him to be able to go into these joint sessions and be heard and be our voice in this Capitol building, despite what John Burns says or anybody else. We elected him. We expect, as Georgia taxpayers, to have representation, and he is our representative. And I think it's disgusting that they would do anything to prevent him from going into that joint session.
I'm hearing a lot this morning about folks waiting for an apology and for the charge to be dropped. Is that part of what you guys are calling for?
I mean, sure. That would be good, but I would like to see John Burns resign. I think that what he did was cross the line, and it's inexcusable, and he overstepped his authority along with that fake attorney that he has, that Williams guy, and they both need to be gone out of this building.
But you said you guys are constituents. It looks like a big, pretty big crowd. Do you think some of these other folks are constituents as well?
Absolutely, yes. We had 10 that came down with us, and there's many more that are in his district that are here today.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you for speaking with us for a few minutes.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being here. I know Colton appreciates it too.
Yeah, he's our man.
So if you heard that carefully, they said they came down with at least 10 other constituents from Colton Moore's area. That's a pretty long drive for folks to get to the Capitol building at 9 o'clock in the morning. So we were surprised, but very pleased that that number of folks showed up. There were also representatives of some key organizations. We spoke with Nathaniel Darnell, who is president of the GRA, the Georgia Republican Assembly, and he had some very pointed thoughts regarding what's now happened with Colton Moore and what's not happened in the aftermath of the event. Let's hear what Nathaniel had to offer.
Quinn, I am here with Nathaniel Darnell, president of the GRA for Georgia.
Nathaniel, thank you for taking a few minutes.
Sure, absolutely. We're definitely excited to be here to support our friend, GRA-endorsed Senator Colton Moore. We know that he was wrongly treated a few days ago, last joint session with the governor was speaking. It was wrong how they treated him. He was unconstitutionally dismissed from being allowed into the room. We saw him not only manhandled, but assaulted, battered by a person who is listed as the general counsel for the Speaker of the House over a personal dispute. It was terrible. And sadly, the Speaker has not issued an apology. We've seen apologies coming from the Lieutenant Governor, from Josh McCoon at the Georgia GOP, a few other legislators, but for some reason the Speaker's office is stubbornly unwilling to acknowledge they did anything wrong. They said that the doorkeepers did what was necessary, and so did the state patrolman who arrested Colton unlawfully. I'm hopeful that the Speaker's office will back down and apologize today. They're supposed to let him back into the joint session like they should have originally, so that's good. But we'd also like to see an apology from the Speaker's office, an apology from his deputy chief of staff and so-called general counsel who pushed him and knocked him to the floor. And we ought to see legal charges brought against them. The charges against Colt should be dropped, and charges should be brought against the Speaker's office for this terrible, unlawful display. And we hope that this is highlighting a lot of the heavy-handed tyranny that goes on here at State Capitol. This is not really unusual. This is something that happens on a lot of different issues here, and we hope that it creates greater awareness by the grassroots and people activate and get down here and start paying more attention to what our elected officials are doing.
Well, as you say, grassroots. Well, there's some of the grassroots right now.
Yeah, look at all these people that came.
There's probably a couple hundred people, maybe more, standing in the atrium.
Isn't it exciting? It's great how many people. I mean, people from every corner of the state have come out here. We've got people from the border of Florida. We've got people from the border of Tennessee that have come down here to support Colton. and I think it's great.
You mentioned an apology. I think everybody's calling for that. The other thing that that should be done is drop the charges against him. A charge against him.
Absolutely.
Should be dropped. I mean,
why has that not already happened?
Well, there's a lot of questions wrapped around this. You also mentioned so-called general counsel.
Right.
There's information that's now emerged that perhaps calls that into question, whether those words and that title is appropriate. We
right.
don't know.
I know some people have called for Keith Williams to be disbarred. That's a little bit hard to do if you're not even barred yet. Keith is licensed in the state of California, but California does not have reciprocity with Georgia. They won't even let him take the bar exam out here. So I'm not sure how he is listed as general counsel. That's going to obviously subject him to a lot of scrutiny. But definitely a problem.
Well, congratulations for stepping up.
Thank you for your article.
So many have not yet.
Thank you for your articles on this subject.
You bet. We hope that more of the legislators will take this to heart. And we'll look at this crowd and look at their constituents and hopefully do the right thing going forward. So, Nathaniel, thank you again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It was good to hear Nathaniel's comments there. And we give him and the GRA credit for stepping up, as we said we would. When this first came about, we said we would acknowledge those who stepped up on behalf of Colton Moore and constitutional law and the rule of law in Georgia. And we will continue to do so. It was a fascinating morning as Colton and the rest of the senators began to get ready to convene their Senate session prior to going into the House of Representatives. The groups gathered together on the steps inside the Capitol, and here's what they did. This entire set of events seems to be gaining ground, gaining visibility as time goes on, not losing it. And in support of that, I will tell you that even mainstream media was there to watch the events of Tuesday morning, interview Colton Moore, interview others, and find out why people were there, what their concerns were, and their views on what's happened now. So we give Even them credit for showing up to find out more. We'll look at what their reporting indicated to see how well they covered it. The crowd and some of the media followed Colton Moore to the Senate chamber. They did some business in the Senate, and then, led by Burt Jones, the lieutenant governor, the senators went in procession over to the House of Representatives and waited outside the doors to be let in. You're going to see Colton Moore standing there. In front of him is Burt Jones. Behind him is Steve Gooch. So they were on both sides of him, having a good conversation. So let's take a look at that. You could hear the crowd's reaction as Colton and the Senate Majority Leader Steve Gooch and Burt Jones went into the went into the House chamber, and I can only imagine what the tone was by the folks that have failed so far to stand up and support Colton Moore when they hear that from this crowd gathered at the Capitol to recognize him. Today was actually very interesting. We're going to talk about a signing ceremony that the president had late today. And in the course of that, apparently Mr. Burns felt it important for he and a few of the folks from the House to travel up there and be in Washington for the ceremony. We find that ironic, and here's why. Senator Colton Moore was the one to find trafficking going on in Hartsfield Airport last year. He filmed it. He reported it. He was assaulted trying to capture video of NGOs providing help and guidance and perhaps transportation and we don't know what else to quote-unquote recently documented travelers, which we assume to be illegal aliens being trafficked by these organizations through Hartsfield Airport. He reported it. He filmed it. He provided that. We brought it out. We reported it. And Burns did nothing. He and the House, and unfortunately most of the Senate, ignored it. They did nothing with it. Nobody called for investigations. Nobody took action that we can see. And about a month later, Laken Riley lost her life. So we found it particularly ironic and troubling that John Burns and some of his compadres would take the time to travel to Washington to make it look like they were part of this Laken Riley Act. We think that's wrong. So we will continue to call this out. We will call it as we see it, as we go forward. We recognize those who have stood up for Colton Moore. We encourage that. We encourage the rest of the legislators to do the same. We actually heard an argument last night, or a statement, I'll call it for the moment, that we shouldn't expect our legislators to stand behind Colton Moore. We shouldn't expect it because we are given the system that we are living in today. And because that system exists as it does, if they were to stand up, they will lose their power, if you will, their influence among their colleagues to get bills passed and other things. That's interesting, but we find that flawed because as the famous saying goes, all it takes for evil to triumph is for good men and women to do nothing. And so we continue to suggest, encourage, urge our legislators to stand up for what's right. In this case, what's right is to stand under and with the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of Georgia, the laws of Georgia, and the, very frankly, the right thing to do. And we all know what it is. And you could hear it from the voices in that crowd. So with that, we're going to take a break and we will be back with more from what happened today during the confirmation hearings.
Well, in the case of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, these are two medications that have been FDA approved for use in humans for decades. Mm-hmm. They are very, very inexpensive. Interestingly, available over the counter in almost every other country other than the US and Canada. Yeah. You can just walk into a pharmacy and buy them like we buy Tylenol in much of the world because they're that safe. And we've known for decades that ivermectin has very strong antiviral properties. It has anti-inflammatory properties. And both mm-hmm. ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are what we call zinc ionophores. They help to move zinc from the bloodstream into the cell, which is where it needs to be in order to fight off a virus. So lots of application for these. And we have every reason to believe that those drugs also will likely have some efficacy against H5N1 or a number of other respiratory viruses that we may meet down the road.
Okay. So today, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was before the Senate and facing questions from both Democrats and Republicans. Keep in mind that up until RFK switched from the Democratic Party and became an independent, and then ultimately joined Trump's campaign as one of his team, he was a Democrat. And so you would think that the Democrats would have what they used to treat as a friend in front of them and would ask appropriate, open, you know, questions for him. That seemed to be anything but the case. As Senator Ron Johnson commented, he was very disappointed in the attack questioning that was being done by the Democrats. Let's hear from RFK for just a few moments on some of his comments, and then we'll play a couple very specific ones that we think you'll find interesting.
When I launched my campaign, it was about uniting Americans, Democrats and Republicans. There's no issue that should unite us more than this chronic health epidemic. There's no such thing as Republican children or Democratic children. These are our kids. 66% of them are damaged. I know what a healthy kid looks like. I don't think anybody is going to be able to do this like I have because of my peculiar experience, because I've litigated against these agencies. When you litigate against them, you get a PhD in corporate capture and how to unravel it. I've written 6 books about these agencies. I know a lot about them and I know how to fix it. And there's nobody who will fix it the way that I do because I'm not scared of vested interests.
So that was a very interesting segment that he did. One of the things, and it's particularly apt for the folks, some folks here in Georgia, who have been espousing and working toward election integrity for these past 4 years, and some longer than that, and in some cases have been called conspiracy theorists, usually by some of the folks in the Secretary of State's office for reasons we don't quite know. But RFK faced one of the similar questions, and yet he seemed to have very proper answers for this. Let's hear it.
Question for you. Are you a conspiracy theorist?
That is a pejorative, Senator, that's applied to me, mainly to keep me from asking difficult questions of powerful interest. I was told that I was a conspiracy theorist. That label was applied to me because I said that the vaccines, the COVID vaccine, didn't prevent transmission and it wouldn't prevent infection when the government was telling people, Americans, that it would. I was saying that because I was looking at the monkey studies in May of 2020. I was called a conspiracy. Now everybody admits it. I was called a conspiracy theorist because I said red dye caused cancer. And now FDA has acknowledged that and banned it. I was called a conspiracy theorist because I said fluoride lowered IQ. Last week, JAMA published a meta review of 87 studies saying that there's a direct inverse correlation between IQ loss.
All right. So I'm going to assume
I can go on for about a week.
Is there anyone?
So as you can tell, many of the things that RFK has been talking about have indeed proved to be true. So what does that mean for the folks here in Georgia and elsewhere that have been saying, hey, something's wrong about our elections? Something doesn't add up. And yet mainstream media and those in power that don't want to see investigations and change seem to refer it very quickly as conspiracy theories. We're going to talk a little bit more about even that term and where it came from when it emerged onto the public eye back in the 60s. Let's hear a little bit about what Ron Johnson had to say about the testimony going on with RFK today.
Seeing as I'm surprised by the hostility on the other side, I'm highly disappointed in it. I don't know if you remember when you called me up and you were contemplating setting your political differences aside, joining forces with President Trump on an area of agreement, addressing chronic illness, trying to find the root cause of all these problems facing this nation. My first response was, Bobby, this is an answer to my prayers. we need to get to the answers of this, but even more, we need to heal and unify this divided nation. I'm not necessarily the most optimistic guy because we've got enormous challenges facing this nation, but I thought, wow, here's somebody from the left, somebody I don't agree with on many issues politically, coming together with President Trump and focusing on an area of agreement, something that the American people desperately want. Finding out the answers. What has caused autism? What is causing chronic illness? Ms. Kennedy, I think I've come to know what's in your heart. I think I know the personal and political price you've paid for this decision. I want to say publicly, I thank you for that. I truly appreciate what you're doing here. Can't we come together as a nation and do this? Can we do it? Aren't you getting tired of this? I'm getting tired of this. So again, Ms. Kennedy, I need to enter in the record. These are just 11 letters of support signed by 63,000 people, thousands of doctors. From the American Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, Independent Medical Alliance, the North Carolina Physicians and Freedom Group, Governor Jeff Landry from Louisiana. These are Americans, nonpartisan. A lot of these people, I know because I've advocated with you, a lot of them are Democrats. They put their political differences aside. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to enter this in the record.
Without objection.
So you can tell that there's a lot of support for RFK, a lot from the public, and we believe a lot from both sides of the aisle, as it were, if there is in fact an aisle in the public's eye. But a lot of support for RFK among the right-thinking senators in that room. The kind of questions he got were very similar to the old, yes, answer yes or no, do you still beat your wife questions that you've heard so many times in confirmation hearings for Supreme Court and other things. There's just no right answer for them, and they mean it that way. So how big are the issues that RFK is talking about? Now, some will recall that his dialogue in interviews with Tucker Carlson and even before he joined Trump's campaign indicated that the health issues we face in the U.S. are broadly based. He's talked on a number of occasions that the U.S., even though we spend more than any other country on the planet, we have some of the worst health outcomes. And in fact, they're getting worse over time. How could that be? And how do we change that? Now, some would say, and you could hear it in some of the questions today, some would say, well, we can't, we don't want to give any change to the way we do Medicare or the way we treat vaccines or the way we treat big pharma. But without that level of change, can those dynamics really be, really be changed? Let's hear some of his comments regarding our kids and the problem that our kids face.
Agencies should be transparent. And if we want Americans to restore trust in the public health agencies, we need transparency. I want to say something about what you first said. When I launched my campaign, it was about uniting Americans, Democrats and Republicans. There's no issue that should unite us more than this chronic health epidemic. There's no such thing as Republican children or Democratic children. These are our kids. 66% of them are damaged. I know what a healthy kid looks like because I had so many of them in my family. I didn't know anybody with a food allergy growing up, peanut allergy. Why do 5 of my kids have allergies? Why are we seeing these explosions in diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, neurological diseases, depression, all these things that are related to toxic to the environment? Why can't we just agree with each other to put differences about so many issues, intractable issues aside, and say, we're going to end this. I don't think anybody is going to be able to do this like I have, because of my peculiar experience, because I've litigated against these agencies. When you litigate against them, you get a PhD in corporate capture and how to unravel it. I've written 6 books about these agencies. I know a lot about them, and I know how to fix it. And there's nobody who will fix it the way that I do, because I'm not scared of vested interests. I don't care. I'm not here because I want a position or a job. I have a very good life and a happy family. This is something I don't need. I want to do this because we're going to fix it. And the other thing is, we are attracting now a caliber of people to HHS like never before in history. And they're entrepreneurs, they're disruptors, they're innovators of immense talent that are walking away, many of them, from growing concerns. They're not coming there for position. They're coming there because they want to save our country. And they're from across the political spectrum. And all these Democrats are opposed to me for partisan issues. They used to be my friends. They agreed with me on all the environmental issues that I've been working on for my whole career. Now they're against me because anything that President Trump does, any decision he makes, has to be lampooned, derided, discredited, marginalized, vilified.
That seems to be in direct alignment with, in fact, what is being done by the left, by the bad guys, as Trump continues to push faster and faster for change. One of the things that I believe is going to make many big pharma heads explode, as it were, is RFK's previous statements, and I believe some current statements, about this blanket immunity that's enjoyed by many of the big pharma concerns. Let's hear about that for just a moment.
Do is I would get rid of that immunity. I would, you know, I would lift the immunity and make them accountable and make them responsible, because that's the only way to ensure the safety of this product. They haven't paid anything with vaccines, because vaccines are immune from liability. So you cannot, no matter how negligent that company is, no matter how reckless they are, no matter how grievous your injury, you can't sue them.
So we've reported in the past on the Vaccine Act that was put in place in the 1980s and the immunity that it provides to vaccine manufacturers. And then the fact that vaccines seem to double, triple, quadruple in number very quickly in the decades following. So back in the 60s and 70s, kids would typically have 6 or 7 vaccines total throughout their childhood. I believe we're now up to something in the 70s. And then you look at the health outcomes we've spoken of as well, and those are showing a trend toward, again, worse and worse outcomes over time, in apparently proportion to potentially some of these other substances that are going into their bodies. So we will look forward expectantly to RFK's next round of questioning tomorrow. We hope to see him confirmed and put in charge to lead the Health and Human Services organization going forward. Let's take one more break if we can. We're going to hear about the metals market and how that might help folks plan a better financial outcome for the future.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because You really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay. A few minutes ago, we mentioned NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and it appears now that NGOs have been used to take money and get it given to them by the government and then spend it in ways that might not be in Americans' best interest. But they are largely immune from much reporting, unlike government organizations that may be open to FOIA requests or open record requests. NGOs are often immune from those in most cases, or in many cases in the past. So beginning now, Kristi Noem has announced that we've stopped giving money to the NGOs. Let's listen.
Yes, well, thank you, Will, for inviting me to be with you. Today, we are announcing that we have stopped all grant funding that's being abused by NGOs to facilitate illegal immigration into this country. So it's amazing to me the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent by the federal government that has been sent to NGOs to facilitate this invasion of our country. So I've taken action to stop that those funds, to reevaluate them, and to make sure that we're actually using the taxpayer dollars in a way that strengthens this country, that keeps us safe. So I think people are curious when we look at grants that are given out by federal agencies at how they're utilized, and that evaluation needs to be done. We're not spending another dime to help the destruction of this country. We're going to make sure that we follow through on what President Trump has promised, and that's to make sure that we're securing our border, deporting those who are here illegally, and committing criminal actions, and that our taxpayer dollars aren't spent to help it.
And Madam Secretary, I don't think people fully understand the role that NGOs play, many NGOs play, in facilitating illegal immigration. I just want to share these numbers with everybody up on the screen. As we spend over $380 million, did in 2024, for sheltering and service programs for illegal illegal immigrants. But the vast network of NGOs that help facilitate it through Panama, through Mexico, and make it a landing spot here in the United States is a massive contributor here to illegal immigration. So what you're telling us today is that now stops, at least the federal funding of that stops. Mm-hmm.
Yes, through the Department of Homeland Security, we have stopped spending those dollars to fund those NGOs. And, well, what's been so revealing is that many of these NGOs actually have infrastructure and operations set up in Mexico on that side of the border that are telling those illegal immigrants to come to them, and they will get them across the border. So they're not just operating in the United States. They're operating outside of the United States to help make it easier for those who want to break our law.
So imagine how concerning that is to have NGOs taking federal funds and operating not just in the country, but outside the country, facilitating folks to come in potentially illegally. Remember, we reported and had J.J. Carroll on the show going back 2 or 3 months ago, and he reported several names of NGOs that were facilitating even child trafficking into the U.S. across the border. We had video of young kids, 8, 9, 10, 12, being shepherded through airports by people that would not identify themselves, would not even say that they were anybody associated with the children, and the children appeared too scared to speak with the reporter that was trying to find out who was taking them through the airport. So is this what they're talking about? It would seem to be. One of the things that that you saw on that chart was some of these are what appear to be religious organizations, or they claim to be religious organizations. We're going to play something from J.D. Vance. And again, we are not here to support or pass judgment on any of these NGOs or their affiliated organizations. However, when someone like the vice president expresses what they are observing about who's doing what, this begins to get quite concerning, and we want to share it. So let's hear what J.D. Vance had to say.
This particular issue, Margaret, because as a practicing Catholic, I was actually heartbroken by that statement. And I think that the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops needs to actually look in the mirror a little bit and recognize that when they receive over $100 million to help resettle illegal immigrants, are they worried about humanitarian concerns or are they actually worried about their bottom line? We are going to enforce immigration law. We're going to protect the American people.
Yeah.
Donald Trump promised to do that. And I believe the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, if they're worried about the humanitarian costs of immigration enforcement, let them talk about the children who have been sex trafficked because of the wide open border of Joe Biden.
You personally
let them
support
talk about
them going
people
into
like Lake and Riley
churches.
Who were brutally murdered. I support us doing law enforcement against violent criminals, whether they're illegal immigrants or anybody else, in a way that keeps us safe.
So you can hear that he is concerned about child trafficking. There's another gentleman that came out and has made statements regarding, again, Catholic Charities. And you'll recall that J.J. Carroll himself reported the name Catholic Charities as one of those contributing and facilitating in some ways child trafficking across the border and through the United States. Here's another gentleman that has information as well.
It's the surface. There's so much more.
What about stuff like the Catholic Charities down there helping people assimilate into the United States? And we're not leaving them in Mexico or leaving them in Texas or Arizona. These people are being escorted, assisted in the most generous way to be peopling all sorts of different states around the country.
Yeah, I'll say this carefully, but I think it's the truth. I think these organizations...
I want to make sure you pass, get through your confirmation in 2000. don't take yourself out of the running.
I am myself Roman Catholic, and I will tell you that Catholic Charities and all these groups that wrap themselves in religion are basically co-conspirators in human trafficking operations.
They
are basically helping the cartels make their money, and they're making a little money on the side for them. I know that people would like to say these are religious organizations. They may be loosely affiliated with their respective churches, but they are not the churches. And these organizations make a lot of money. They came and lobbied us during the Trump administration. They wanted high refugee ceilings, and they wanted a leaner asylum policy that let more people in. What they left out of the conversation is they make a significant amount of money per capita for every person who enters the country. And basically what's happening now is the federal government is using these organizations to launder illegal immigration.
So again, we've talked in previous weeks and months that some of the topics that we expect to see uncovered may be difficult, may be troubling. We are not passing judgment on any organization as we sit here tonight. We are, though, reporting what is being reported publicly by others, and we think that it's valid enough that folks need to take it into their thinking, do their own research, and then come up with what they believe are the proper conclusions for themselves. Okay. One of the other things, we have two more topics to cover for tonight. One of the things that was reported by Tucker Carlson, who we've referred to continually as one of the truth tellers, as more and more has been disclosed in these past couple of years, was the connection between the CIA and JFK's assassination. We're going to review a couple things that he said. We are, as we sit here today, we are 9 days away from the deadline for some officials to present a plan to President Trump to disclose and release the remaining records surrounding the JFK assassination. What will be in there? We don't know exactly, but we might be able to have folks ready, given some of the clues that others have heard, including Tucker Carlson. Let's hear what he had to say. This first segment goes back to when he was still with Fox News, I think now over 2 years ago.
We spoke to someone who had access to these still hidden CIA documents, a person who was deeply familiar with what they contain. We asked this person directly, did the CIA have a hand in the murder of John F. Kennedy, an American president? And here's the reply we received verbatim. Quote, the answer is yes. I believe they were involved. It's a whole different country from what we thought it was. It's all fake.
So, yes, I believe the CIA was involved. Some months later, Tucker said this as well.
Reclassified the Kennedy documents 60 years after his assassination. No one, even peripherally involved, is still alive. So what could possibly be the sources and methods that we're supposedly showing the world by declassifying these are so outdated, they're irrelevant. They were using disappearing ink in 1963. So why in the world would we be continuing to hide the truth about the Kennedy assassination 60 years later? And of course, the answer is obvious, because it implicates not individuals, but institutions, and reveals them as complicit in a murder and in the overthrow of the U.S. government. And the U.S. government is complicit in the overthrow of the U.S. government. And that's the truth. I know that for a fact, because I interviewed someone who saw the documents.
So again, he says he interviewed someone who's actually seen the documents that connect the CIA to Kennedy's assassination. Let's make a couple more connections. Trump has taken certain actions in the last few days. We don't know that they're all involved with the JFK assassination, but Tucker also reported that he had been threatened for talking about such things by a representative, I believe he refers to it as an attorney, for Mike Pompeo. Let's hear this.
He's threatening me. He's in my car. With my dog sitting next to me, I'll never forget this. And I said, are you really saying that to reveal that the U.S. government had a role in the murder of a democratically elected president, to say that out loud, that's the crime? What about the actual crime, which is murdering a president? Like, you're covering up for that, Mike Pompeo.
What did he say to that?
He had no response at all. And so Mike Pompeo is the one who pressed Trump to keep those documents secret. And so it's like, what's crazy to me is not just that Pompeo did that. I think Pompeo is a really sinister person and a criminal. I think that because the facts suggest that. He was caught. Yahoo News, Mike Isikoff wrote a long piece on this several years ago. His employees went to Mike Isikoff and said, hey, Mike Pompeo is plotting to murder Julian Assange, who has never even been charged with a crime in the United States, as CIA director. That's illegal. You're not allowed. Federal employees are not allowed to just kill people they don't like. Okay, just to set the baseline here. So that's who Mike Pompeo is. But he somehow intimidated Trump into not releasing this. Well, okay, that's all bad, right? I think it's criminal behavior.
So is it criminal behavior? It sure sounds like it. He made some additional comments as well. Regarding what Pompeo did during the Trump administration to reportedly attempt to block the release of CIA documents and JFK documents that would be related to the CIA.
Appearance on Friday, President Trump introduced you by saying that he plans to, if elected, establish a commission to declassify the remaining documents around your uncle's murder in 1963.
Yeah.
And I think everyone at this point knows the truth, which is the CIA is implicated in that. Those documents protect CIA, maybe among others.
Well, whether they do or not, I mean, it's odd that they've not allowed them to be released.
What could possibly be the explanation?
More than 60 years after my uncle's death, almost 65 years. Oh, 62 years after his death. And there, none of the people who were implicated in that crime are alive now.
Yes.
You know, the last ones have died off in the last year or two. And so it clearly is to protect the institution.
Yes.
And that's wrong. It's just wrong. And it's wrong for a Democrat and it's wrong for a Republican.
It's just interesting, though, that a bipartisan list of presidents, low these 6 decades, have kept those files classified.
Well, you and I have both. I was astonished that Trump didn't declassify him, because he promised to during the campaign.
That was Mike Pompeo who did that.
Yeah, and that I talked to President Trump for the first time about that this week. And
what did he say?
He said that Mike Pompeo begged him to, and I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here.
No,
he told the same thing to you.
That's right? True.
But he said Mike Pompeo called him and said this would be a catastrophe to release these. You need to not do it. And yeah. That, you know.
I want to say again, I think Mike Pompeo is a criminal. So that's my view. He's threatened to sue me for saying that, but I hope he will, because that's true. But that kind of tells the whole story right there, right? That the CIA is.
Well, yeah. So that's
why would the CIA be trying to keep these files classified if they had nothing to do with the murder? I don't really get that.
And we see those kinds of things going on again and again and again as we watch what's happening with various parties through all of this. Interestingly enough, Trump made the decision to revoke the security detail for Mike Pompeo since the election, and this was reported just this past week. Connections, perhaps. Sometimes folks will tell you who they are simply by if you let them tell you. So let's hear out of Pompeo's own mouth what he thought of the right way to behave as part of the CIA.
Cadet, what's the cadet motto at West Point? You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's like we had entire training courses. It reminds you of the glory of the American experiment.
The glory of the American experiment is what Mike Pompeo calls those things. So concerning, to say the least. And as we get through the next few days, we highly encourage folks. We're going to likely do an additional broadcast sometime toward the weekend, perhaps over the weekend, with additional information, just as a reminder about some of the facts surrounding the JFK assassination. There's a vast amount of information to draw on. So our goal is to remind you of certain things so that as information comes out, it will make sense in context of the various things that some folks don't remember. There's literally been 40,000 books, we are told, that have been written about the JFK assassination. And so it's difficult to keep all this closely at hand, but we do want to make sure that that folks are prepared for this. We don't know if the plan will be produced on that day. It's next Friday is the quote unquote deadline, the 15-day deadline for it to be the plan to be presented to Trump. Whether that will be an imminent release or whether it'll be done in some sort of staged fashion, we don't know yet. But we do know that the information will finally, we hope, begin to bring answers to some of the questions that have plagued the American public for now 62 years. And that number in and of itself begs one question. Why would it be hidden? Why would it need to be classified and tucked away from prying American eyes for 62 years? Okay, so earlier today, Trump signed his first bill in front of a pretty broad audience. And it was the Laken-Riley Act, and it forces Homeland Security to take into custody any illegal alien found to have committed certain crimes. So they are not out on the street waiting to commit yet again another crime, which is indicative of what happened with Ms. Riley. The gentleman that is now convicted of killing her had been arrested already a couple of times and was released. In one case actually provided a plane ticket to come to Georgia is what we are told, and unfortunately resulted in him killing her. So many hope that this will be a key step in preventing such occurrences and such murders in the future. Let's hear what her family, who attended with Trump today, had to say.
I want to thank President Trump for the promises he made to us. He said he would secure our borders and that he would never forget about Laken. And he hasn't. He's a man of his word. We trust that he will fight for the American people. Most importantly, I want to thank our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, because without his sacrifices, Laken's story would have ended on that horrific day that she was taken from us. But because of him, we can continue living knowing that we will see Laken again.
So like many, our thoughts and prayers go out to Laken Riley's family, friends, and everyone that's been touched by this horrific murder. And we hope that the steps taken today will bring an end to such crimes, and that her it'll bring meaning, unfortunately, but bring meaning to that terrible loss. So with that, we're going to forego our theme leaving tonight. We will take just a moment and remember Lake and Riley, and we will see you again on Sunday of this week. Thank you for being with us.